You're listening to A Walk in the Woods with Craig Mott. I'm Craig Mott, hey, and guess what? I'm walking in the woods. Right at this very moment, I am walking upon a path which I walked 2 years ago. Actually, on this very day 2 years ago, I was walking with Dan Rubin and Matt Mullenweg. And we were doing an eight-day walk on this road. It's called the Kumano Kodo. It's a World Heritage Pilgrimage Path. There's only two World Heritage Certified Pilgrimage Routes in the world. There is Kumano Kodo, and there is the Camino de Santiago in Spain. And up until that point, for the 3 years leading up to the walk I did 2 years ago, I had done many walks with a number of people, and I began to invite folks from around the world to join me on these walks, and we would have these incredible conversations and wonderful experiences as we moved across all these different various bits of Japan. And one nagging thing at the end of each of those walks was that we often wondered, what could we do to capture the goodness of that thing we had just experienced? And so there was talk of, you know, do we do interviews? Do we turn it into a podcast? And it just so happened that Dan Rubin and I had been planning on doing a walk together for a number of years. So we decided, well, Dan's a photographer and I'm a photographer. Let's shoot the heck out of this walk. And then what we'll do is we will hide in a little farmhouse in a tiny village in Gifu Prefecture, in the village of Hida Furukawa, which was featured in the movie My Name. We would hide there for a week and we'd put the book together, a collection of images from the walk, and we would put it up for print-on-demand sales, and we would be done. That was the plan. So Dan and I and Matt, we all went on this walk together, and we shot the heck out of it, and we walked through the rain, and we walked through the sun, and we walked through the mud, and we trudged over these bits that I'm walking right now, which are, basically, I'm on a ridgeline here, walking atop all these gnarled roots from these cedars and cypresses that have grown around the edges of the path. And so we did the walk, and we went to Hida, and we put the book together, we printed it out, an edit of the photos, we spent days kind of staring at the images and moving around, and we came up with a first draft of the book. And then we began talking with Blurb, because we thought, well, alright, if we're going to do a print-on-demand book, maybe we can use this as an excuse. Gonna wait for the wind to die down a little. And so we finished the book, and we thought, well, if we're going to do print-on-demand, why don't we take this as an opportunity to see how far we can push the print-on-demand medium. And so we talked with Blurb in San Francisco, and we worked with one of their print specialists and representatives, and we went back and forth over a number of iterations of different qualities of books that we could produce over the course of months. And in the end, it turned out that actually print-on-demand is a lot more limited than we ever thought. The number of papers you can use, the types, the kinds of covers, the cloths, the bindings, all of that is pretty locked down for within the print-on-demand ecosystem. By this point, we had spent about 2 months, and the book that we had spec'd on print-on-demand would have cost $70 to $80 per unit, and the minimum order, we were told, would be about 200 units. So, those economics don't really work out for anyone, because we figured that the max price for a book like this would be about $100, and it just didn't make sense to do it that way. If we were going to go to a scale of 200 books, we might as well go and do offset printing. So I emailed my printer in Japan with whom I worked with on many, many books. I said, hey, we have this project. Are you interested? And 20 minutes later, he responds, Mr. Kohi Yama-san, wonderful guy. And he said, I'm in, let's do it. And so then we spent about two more months specking offset materials, doing another iteration on the design. And in the course of that time, we realized, well, I mean, if we're going to really do this, we decided to print 1,000 copies. Might as well run a Kickstarter, right? So we shot the video. We actually shot the video around New York City. Dan and I both happened to be there by chance in August of that year. And by the time we shot that video, it had already been about 5 months since the walk. So what had begun as a project, as a book, that was supposed to take 5 days, and we just put it up online, and anyone who wants it can hit print and get a copy, turned into this 5-month project, and it still hadn't launched. Kickstarter video is done. The book is all spec'd out. We've got dummies. Looks great. Feels great. We're confident. I don't like to run a Kickstarter campaign unless everything is done, essentially. And so we got to that point. Everything was pretty much done. And we ran the Kickstarter campaign, and we sold far more books than we ever expected. We sold about $60,000 worth of books, which is a ton of books for a book like this, which is just a niche, esoteric art book, essentially. In the end, we sold almost all of them. We sold them for $100 a pop. And the per unit cost of production, I mean, we could have gotten this down a lot lower if we had printed in, say, Hong Kong. But printing in Japan, I wanted to support the Japanese industry, and I liked working with the local companies here, and I've been working with them for a while. The pre-unit cost was about $30 a book. So overall, I would say that we pulled in near $100,000 net revenue, which for a book like this is fantastic. And then Dan and I split the profits there, so it was about $35,000 each to split. But if you netted out all of the hours we had put into it, if you'd really kind of calculated that and you'd spread $35,000 across that amount of time, I would say there was probably about a $20 an hour salaried gig, which is still not bad for a book, and certainly not bad for a book like this. Now, why make an object? Why make that thing? Why print it out? You know, this is the thing that was irking me about those other walks. You do a walk, you have this experience, and then it disappears. How do you give edges to something that fundamentally doesn't have an edge, that doesn't have a container around it? You know, and I think sort of all you can do, the best you can do, is do an edit of that experience. You can cull some subset of moments and try to put them into a thing, into an object, an artifact, something that's immutable that you can hold in your hands, and you can say, this is what we did, this is what that was. And there's something powerful about that, about taking an experience, taking an edgeless thing, giving it edges, putting it into an artifact, and putting that out in the world. In fact, just 30 minutes ago on this trail, I bumped into two people, two angels, traveling from London, but both expats, one from Perth and the other from Italy, Sally and Francesco. And Sally and Francesco and I started chatting. They were heading north, I'm heading south. And Sally said, "Are you Craig by any chance?" I said, "Maybe." And she said, "We are here because of your book and because of the Walk Kumano website." And, you know, that's kind of a really wonderful thing to experience in the moment. Total serendipity on the trail, meeting someone who is not just there, but enjoying it so much. They're having so much fun because of this thing that you put out in the world. And, you know, it also speaks to this idea of how do you transmute an experience into something bigger than the experience itself? Which is to say, how do you have an experience, and how do you make sure that what you've learned during that experience, what you've taken away from that experience, can be given to other people? And I think, you know, books and websites, putting those edges around those experiences is certainly a strong way to do that. And our philosophy between the book and the website, the split there was, the book was meant to be almost like a visual poem to the experience, and really just for Dan and I in a lot of ways. You know, this is a thing that we went on at a certain point in our lives, and there was kind of a lot of meaning behind it to a certain degree. And we have this thing to look back on, to reflect back on, to bring us back to those moments. And even as I walk today and yesterday and the day before, because I put that book together, there's this resonance of these moments, the moments from the book, that I see as I'm walking and experience. I feel that resonance in this deep way. I walked past a post box yesterday, and it was one that Dan shot. And instantly I'm back in that moment. And I've walked this trail 3 or 4 times now. And there are moments like that, layered experiences at certain touch points along a path that, you know, you're brought back to again and again as you experience it. And there's something to be said about walking the same path over and over again. Same as it is to be said about reading the same book over and over again. You know, the only real reading is rereading. the only real walking is probably rewalking. And so even on this trip, Dan and Matt and I walked south to north. I'm walking north to south for the first time. And it also turns out that for the first time, I've gotten blisters. I've been walking in these boots for 8 years. I've never gotten a single blister. And I don't know if it's because I'm wearing the wrong socks or my pack is too heavy. I've got a bunch of cameras and computer equipment and probably too much stuff on my back. But I got blisters, like raw, nasty heel blisters. And I'm only a couple days into my walk. And I brought sort of bandages and gauze, but I've never had to use it. In fact, the expiration date on the gauze said 2015. So I wrapped them up as well as I could. But it turned out that Sally and Francesco had an incredible amount of super high quality blister pack and blister gauze and foot wrap in their med kit. And they're on the very end of their trip. They only have one more day of walking left. And so they said, as a thank you, as a payment for the website and for the book, yes, as inspiration to come here, please let us give you this medical equipment to heal your horribly bruised feet. So if you're listening, Francesco and Sally, thank you from the bottom of my feet and the back of them, because I'm thinking that from tomorrow, they're going to be much happier because of you. So that concludes episode 1 of A Walk in the Woods with Craig Mott. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening to this kind of weird episode. Episode 006 of On Margins. Episode beta, I guess, 001 of A Walk in the Woods. I'm interested in walking and talking, and the kind of talking that comes specifically from walking. When I recorded this episode, I was a few days into my solo Kumano Koda walk. When I'm in the middle of a long meditation retreat, like the Vipassana one I did last year for 10 days, or the 3-day refresher I did right before this walk, or when I'm in the middle of a long run without music or a podcast, or when I'm in the middle of a multi-day hike in solitude, I can't stop my brain from writing. It just wants to write. I'm constantly writing. It's hard to take notes at Vipassana because, well, you know, it's against the rules, and running and writing don't work so well. So in the middle of this walk, I began to dictate. I started dictating chapters to books, openings for other books, product reviews, design deconstructions. It's, dare I say, fun to do this sort of stuff alone in the woods. It's a little weird at first, the talking out loud into a mic while walking the ridgeline, but, you know, like most things, you acclimate pretty quickly. The biggest issue I found was wind, and I'm sure that could be mitigated by using the right mic. You know, right now I'm talking into a RE20 or whatever mic. And while I was out on the mountain, I was recording into a tin sounding mic on my Bose noise canceling in-ear headphones. It was sort of all I had. Also, listening to the episode again, I realized I left out some details. First of all, the movie is called Your Name, Not My Name. Apologies to all anime fans. And secondly, I told you only the book half of how we philosophically split the book and the website. So the website for Koya Bound was always meant to be the pragmatic output, the detailed output, the guide, you could say. It was meant to be the place I could dump all of my Strava data, steps and elevation gain, and all those other delicious quantified selfies. And it was the place for the map of the walk and the outtakes of photos that didn't quite make it into the book. It was the place for the travelogue write-up, you know, which could, by the way, you really use an edit, but it is as it is. You know, just getting things out in the world sometimes is the best thing to do. It's the place that will probably age a lot less elegantly than the book. That is, the website will feel older more quickly than the book will feel older. The book is, you know, abstract enough to hopefully age in a decently graceful way. I've thought many times about expanding the Kumano site, walkkumano.com. I've done many other Kumano walks since even this walk, even more just up around Koya-san, which is kind of the Shingon Buddhist head area up at the northern end of the Kumano Koda walk. And I have so much other data and other information. Even just adding a page of links would be useful, I think. You know, perhaps someday. You know, there's always a deeper rabbit hole to get stuck down. Anyway, let me know if you found this format interesting, the walk and talk. And as I announced in my newsletter, which you can sign up for at craigmod.com/explorers, You know, I'll be capping this season of On Margins at probably about 10 episodes. So just four more, which at my pace will hopefully be done by the year 2030. As always, thanks for listening. This episode was sponsored by Moss, the green stuff, small, flowerless plants growing in clumps and mats. 12,000 species strong, those luxurious bryophyta growing over all of the beautiful old stones and concrete in Okinoin Cemetery and along the mountain paths of Japan and other countries around the world. Good God, whatever you do, don't confuse them with lichens or liverworts. No, no, no. Moss is its own thing, and very proud of it. Fluffy stuff. Some of which enjoy sunlight, some of which prefer shade. It's like grass that doesn't need to be mowed. Moss. Thank you for sponsoring this episode.